Ladies and gentlemen, sports fans alike, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky's Sports Talk Chicago, one of the couple, two, three best podcasts around. So sit back, grab yourself a cold one and a Polish sausage, park your keister in the French room, and listen to Bill Swirsky's Sports Talk Chicago.
In Chicago, you know that all sports rock. The Bears, Hawks, Bulls, Cubs, and Sox. Pick your favorite, you can choose, as long as the Packers lose. For everything you need to know, it's Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago. Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago.
Hey everybody, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. This is your hosts, Alex and Sean. On this episode, we're going to be talking about the opening of Major League Baseball's regular season. We're going to be talking Bears news and notes. We're going to be talking some Blackhawks and more. But first, I'd like to thank our sponsor, the Rockford IceHogs. If you're not familiar with the Rockford IceHogs, they're the AHL minor league affiliate of the Chicago Blackhawks. What does that mean for you? You get to see the stars of tomorrow today at family-friendly, affordable prices. The season is winding down quickly, so make sure you head on over to icehogs.com, get yourself a hat, shirt, jersey, tickets, and more. Tell them Swirsky Sports sent you. Alex, how are you doing, my friend?
Can't complain. Doing fine.
So baseball is upon us.
Yes. Yes, it is.
And, you know, regardless of records and wins and loss, et cetera, it's good to have regular season baseball back.
Yeah. I mean, it's what's great about baseball is that you get to watch your team play every single day. I mean, you don't have to wait a week in between games. You don't have to wait a few days between games. You know, you have it every day.
Yeah. Yep. And you know, it's especially nice when you're winning. So opening day for the Cubs was really nice. You got that win in and it felt good. I texted a friend of mine. He texted me earlier in the day. He's like, all right, what are your predictions for the Cubs and Sox records? And I gave it to him. And then after the games, I was like, check that, 162-0.
Obviously. I mean, we were all saying that after opening day.
Yeah. What are your initial thoughts? We are three games in, one series in for the Cubs, and as we're recording this, it's halfway through game one of the of series two. So walk me through your impressions of the Cubs so far, how they're looking.
Well, this lineup has some noticeable holes to start the year. I mean, you know, right now you're trying to piece together a lineup with guys that came out of camp, you know, as borderline MLB hitters and position players and pitchers. What I can say is I really feel good about Marcus Stroman and Justin Steele pitching. It's only been one start for each, but they seem to be locked in early, which is a good sign. My biggest takeaway so far is, you know, Dansby Swanson has hit the ground running as a Chicago Cub. And frankly, I was kind of worried he was going to get off to a really sluggish start, but he's done nothing but hit. His fielding is extraordinary. I think this defense is really, really good. We've seen them make a lot of good plays out there. We've seen a few wacky plays, but
it's funny. It's funny. The game one, you know, we were all excited to see the defense and there was just some oddball defensive miscues from catchers and second base. And you're like, man, this was supposed to be a good defensive team. And then like towards the end of the game, you saw like some really slick double plays and some nice plays. And you're like, okay, you know, I see where this is happening. You know, you get some flubs every now and then, but it is nice to see the defense on this team.
Yeah, and you know, when I say good defense, I'm really emphasizing the middle of the diamond. Nico and Dansby, just, you know, they look smooth and fantastic. We can talk about the misplays from Yan Gomes, because a lot of pitches got away from him. I think that's kind of a fluky thing. It was opening day. It was cold. There was a lot of movement on Stroman's pitches. And you know what? The catchers are getting used to this new pace of play with this pitch clock. And you and I can definitely talk about the pitch clock when it comes, but I wasn't as concerned about that. And, you know, we can talk about the defense in right field because we saw Miles Mastrobrony. I think, you know what play I'm talking about, right? The game-winning hit against the Cubs in game two that the Brewers had.
Yeah.
You know what play I'm talking about.
Yep.
I think most right fielders at least make a bigger play for that ball. But I'm also going to say that it's fair to say that Miles Mastrobrony is probably not going to be playing that position a lot going forward. I mean, right now we're just trying to get Seiya Suzuki healthy. Now, what I can also say confidently is even if he's not really hitting much, you watch Cody Bellinger in center field. He's really good.
Yeah, just, he is.
And we're not just talking about diving plays and whatnot, web gems. You watch the routes he takes in center field. And I was at the game on Sunday afternoon and I was behind home plate, you know, like not in the first section behind home plate, but like the first row, the next section. And when you see the ball hit out there, when you're just above ground level, you get a really nice sense of how the outfielders move, the way they get on routes and track the ball. And Bellinger just does it so smoothly. The way he runs him down, the way he gets on breaks to the fly balls, he knows how to feel that position really, really well.
Absolutely. It's a very high IQ. Reads the ball well, knows to position himself. It's nice to watch. There's a difference between a guy that's just really fast and a guy that's fast and just knows where to be, knows, reads the ball off the bat really well. You know, you remember Andrew Jones?
Yeah, of course.
And just that ball came off the bat and there was no hesitancy. He knew exactly where it was going and adjusted himself, you know, if wind took it or whatever, and just was so smooth out there. And you know, it's fun to watch a good center fielder.
It is. And I think another thing that we can talk about too is when it comes to the defense of this team, you can kind of identify right now where some of the weaknesses are. I think catcher will be fine. You know, you had the one bad day by Gomes and whatever, but you know, you look at first base right now and, you know, Eric Hosmer's won gold gloves and you feel confident that he can make the right plays that are routine, but you don't expect him to be a gold glove first baseman. And you don't really expect the same for Mancini either. I think even when Suzuki does come back, he's got a hell of an arm, but the routes do need to get better out there in right field. But up the middle, you feel good about Horner and Dansby, you feel good about Cody Bellinger, and you feel good about Ian Happ in left field.
And we did talk about the pass balls with Yan Gomes, and I wasn't concerned. It was just I haven't been able to see the games yet because we cut the cord, so trying to figure out Cubs games. So I've been listening on the radio, and the radio it sounds like a catastrophe. But then you see highlights the game afterwards and you're like, the cold weather and Stroman wasn't hitting his marks, you know, early on. I mean, the stuff was good. It just was having some tough luck, locating pitches and, you know, between the cold weather and the pitcher not hitting his marks. Yeah. It was like, okay. You know, it still wasn't good, but you're like, okay, I'm not concerned.
Right. Yeah. And you know, we've seen fluky, weird things happen in April. I mean, whether it's hitting, pitching, fielding, whatever. I mean, look at how much movement Marcus Stroman had on those pitches on that first day. It was really impressive the way Marcus Stroman was able to execute the way he did on a cold day like that. That's not easy to do when you don't really rely on velocity. You rely more on movement and location. That's tough to do in the cold.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, it's one thing if, like, you're a big burly fireball pitcher, you know, big hands. Stroman's a little guy.
And right, he is.
And so, you know, you got a little guy in his, with his little hands and, you know, the, having to blow on your hands like multiple times per at bat, trying to keep them warm. Yeah. It's just, it's tough. It's tough to, you know, to get that movement. And, you know, it was even without hitting his marks, he was keeping guys off the bases and ultimately outpitched Burns, which, you know, I didn't think would be the case.
Tough task. It is a really tough task. And here's another thing that I think is important to observe from opening day is with this pitch clock, with this new pace, we knew going into the season that it was going to be harder for certain pitchers to adjust than others. It's going to be different for each guy because each guy's got a different routine. He's got a different windup. He's got a different mindset. He throws different pitches. He works with different catchers, every single one. But, you know, Marcus Stroman, I think, was one of those guys who was digging the pace of that pitch clock. And it's ironic because he had the first ever pitch clock violation in MLB history in a regular season game, but it was inconsequential. And you saw how good he was. Oh my God. We just gave up the lead again.
Are you serious?
Yep. We just gave up a 3-run homer.
God, that's so frustrating. It's like you called it too.
Yeah.
Yeah. The pitching has been a little frustrating. I mean, mostly it's been the relief, but man, Smiley is not on his game today.
Wow. They looked like a pop fly off the bat too. It just sailed out. What a joke. What a joke. Both times in this game, we take a multi-run lead and then that happens.
Cubs and White Sox pitchers today just ate it.
Wow. Just unbelievable. You saw what I said on Twitter, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
You saw what I said. You saw what I said.
Yep. You called it.
What a joke.
You know, it's one thing when the bullpen's blowing it, like, okay, they're going to, you know, it's going to take them a little bit to get in the groove of things, but we got to rely on our good starting pitching. And the first three games, pretty darn good starting pitching. And then today the wheels fall off.
Yep. Yep. And you could always count on some schlub on the Reds who can't hit water, who fell out of a boat looking like freaking Ted Williams against the Cubs.
It really is true. You get some yokel. He's like, oh, this guy hit one home run last year and a grand slam.
Yep. I mean, you rally to take the lead and immediately you blow it. God, are we going to do this again this year? I'm already getting pissed off. Anyway, where were we?
I don't remember. But the first series, we had good starting pitching. I was pretty impressed with. Steele looked good. Stroman looked good. Tyone looked okay.
Yeah, not his best, but I'm not too worried about him.
Yeah, he's the veteran. I'm not worried about him, but he pitched okay. Is the bullpen that was shaky. And, that was always my concern going into this season, just the bullpen. But what I have been impressed with is Dansby Swanson.
Yes.
The man went, had a rough, he didn't hit well in spring training. People were all up in arms. Oh my God, we gave this guy a long deal, big money, and he can't hit. And he comes in and he's hitting everything.
The at bats are good, and he's not getting fluky hits too. He's hitting the ball hard. Even his outs, like, do you remember his first at bat of the season? It was a rocket to center field.
Yeah. Happper swinging the bat well. I was hopeful for Cody Bellinger to hit. I was like, okay, he's probably not going to hit great, but you're at least going to get some pop in there. And he's been brutal.
Yeah, I mean, he hit the home run today, which was an absolute bomb. But to this point, as we're recording right now, it's his only hit. You see him have some decent at bats, but just can't hit it. You know, like, he gets the full counts, he takes some good pitches, he fouls off a few pitches, but then just can't get the bat around to hit it. It's, unfortunately, I think that all you can really expect from him at this point is defense. And then you can expect a little bit of, power when you can get it, but you're not going to get on base. You're not going to see a high average. You're not going to see, spraying all over the ballpark. You're going to see occasional power and good defense. I really think that's where you're at this point.
And between Bellinger and Hayward, you have one total hit this season so far.
Hey, but it's a home run.
That's true. That's true. Maybe I was a little optimistic on the Cubs. I mean, they're going to be in most games, I think. The good starting pitching.
I really don't like the past few games, how they score runs and immediately give them back.
Right. That's just been frustrating. And you hope to see that relief pitching start to improve once they kind of figure out who their guys are. Cause right now, I mean, the thing about bullpens is, like, it's so fluky. Most of the time you don't have a guy who's just every year, like a Mariano Rivera, that's just good every year. It's almost riding the hot hand. This guy's hot for this year. And then, all right, next year he's kind of crappy and you find the new hot hand, and they're going to have to figure out who's their guy for these situations. Who's the guy that they trust? Who's the one that's pitching well? And that's just going to take a little time to sort itself out and for Rossi to figure out what his strategy is going to look like for who he's going to and in which situations. And, but.
Well, in bullpens too, like, you kind of go through that rotation a bit of guys who are in your system and guys that you have on the team. some guys you think you're high on and they don't end up performing. And then you bring somebody up out of nowhere and they perform. We see it happen virtually every year with this team. Like you could say, logically, you're going to see either one of your younger pitching prospects come up, or you'll see a Scott Efros type where he was kind of just an afterthought and he comes up and he pitches well. The bullpen, I do think, will kind of figure itself out eventually, especially when you have as much pitching depth as you do. You're going to see kind of, I think, a rotating door a bit of like the middle of the pen, because the back end, I still feel pretty solid about. You've got Brad Boxberger, you got Michael Fulmer. You know, it's the rest of it where I think there's going to be a lot of moving pieces.
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's, we kind of said similar things. Is, you know, it's Rossi's got to see who, you know, how each guy looks, how are they pitching against righties, how are they pitching against lefties, how are they pitching in, you know, in high leverage situations, coming in a clean inning versus with runners on, and it's, you have a feel for, all right, who am I trusting? And you don't know that early on. You have no idea. It's a blank slate when it comes to the bullpen. But I will say my man, Edward Alzolay, pitched a nice game.
He like the stuff legit looks good.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been something we've been hoping to see consistently for a while now. And I'm hoping we start to see it consistently.
Yeah, I mean, I think that he is going to turn into one of the more important guys in this pen. I mean, you look at what happened a few days ago against the Brewers. Javier Assad came in and looked really good his first inning. And then the second inning, things blew up on him. Yeah. Could it be a fluke, or could it be a sign that maybe Assad should just be a one inning guy? I really did not understand David Ross's thinking. You're going to bring him in for multiple innings, not warm a guy up in a 1-0 game. I'd understand maybe it was 5-0, but it was a 1-0 game. And you haven't used Alzolay yet. I don't get what you're doing. You should be handling a pen in a 1-0 game like it's a 1-0 game.
The only thing I can think of is he didn't want to burn through multiple arms game 2 of the season.
But to not even have somebody warming.
I mean, that's true, especially on a cold day. Get some guys warmed up. Yeah. I think within 2 weeks, you're going to feel a little more comfortable about this pen and, you know, who he's trusting, what's going to be a standard rotation. You know, Leiter has pitched good so far, which is surprising because he kind of sucked last year. Throwing out the blanket. He sucked. But it's nice to see him pitching well so far. You're right. Is it a fluke thing, or is he a one inning guy, or, you know, is it?
You'll have more time to figure it out. It's just, you wonder.
Yeah. And all those things are valid. It's, it's tough figuring out your bullpen in the beginning of the season.
Yeah. If bullpens are just so fluky and fluid and very, very fickle.
And it's also something a whole lot easier to fix. You know, I any day of the week, you're going to rather have your bullpen have issues than your starting pitching, because your starting pitching is limited depth. And you can bring in arms from your minor league system to patch the bullpen, or, you know, move to trade for a veteran, or, you know, sign veterans that didn't make a roster this early on. It's it's a lot easier to fix a bullpen that's struggling.
Yeah.
Sometimes absolutely. It's just time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you just got to see where certain guys fit.
Right.
It's weird, but I think there is a mental aspect of, you know, certain guys pitching in certain situations.
Yeah. And that's,
you know, it's not necessarily looking at a pen and saying, okay, either this guy is or this guy isn't. Sometimes it's just kind of the rotation of where exactly they pitch.
Right. And that's, you know, you find that comfort level. Your manager finds the comfort level of, this is the guy I like to go to in these situations. And they have a preference. And obviously, you know, depending on when they pitched last and how many innings and, you know, when's their next day off, et cetera, it factors in. But you have a preference for this is who I want to go to in this situation. And that feel takes a little time. And, you know, it's and we're working on that. It's a work in progress. I think I agree with you. I think there's enough arms in this organization to sort itself out, to find who are the guys.
Right.
And, you know, are they going to have a lights out bullpen? Who knows, but I'm confident that they'll at least be a competent bullpen.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of how I feel. I'm still pissed off. You gave up a 3-run home run to Nick Vossler. I'm still stewing over this. People listening are just going to hear my pissed off tone this whole time.
Alex, what do you think?
Pretty much. Oh, and there's another base hit for the Reds. I'm so sick of the loser ass Reds playing like the 27 Yankees against us every single time. And listen, the Reds for a while had a good lineup, but the past 2 years, it's been garbage. And yet when they play the Cubs, they're like the 27 Yankees. It's fucking insane. I need to calm down. I'm sorry.
And stupid Bob Nightingale tweeting, "The legend of Jason Vossler grows."
Did he really tweet that?
He did.
Oh my God. You know, he's an ex-Cub prospect.
Is he?
Yes, he is.
Huh.
Yeah. Yeah, because like I'm like, that name looks familiar. I'm like, oh yeah. And I don't mind him succeeding. Just why do you have to do it against us?
Right.
And the number of times we lose games giving up home runs to like bench guys, and those home runs look like pop flies and they somehow just sail out. Like, seems really high, right?
Yes. It's just frustrating. Like, it's, you know, they're not towering shots. You're like, oh, out. This is an out. Oh, God damn it.
Like, I thought that 3-run homer by Vossler, like, I thought that was just a routine fly off the bat. And then it just kept going and going and going and going. It's just, man. You know, remember a few years ago when the Reds had Votto and Suarez and Jesse Winker all in their primes?
Yeah. Like,
that was a good, good lineup. A really good lineup. So when you gave up a lot of runs to them, you're like, yeah, well, you're just going to need to outslug them. I mean, they've got a lot of good firepower. That's not the Reds anymore. I mean, this is like a filler roster, but they still just torture us. I mean, and look, Great American Ballpark, it's very, very, very hitter friendly, but still, like, they can't get a shutdown inning. It's just so frustrating. Anyway.
Yeah, hopefully the Cubs can come back in this one, because I get it. The Reds won their opening series, but you've got to, if you're the Cubs, you had, you know, you should be 2-1 right now going into the series feeling good. having won a series at home against the Brewers, and you have, you know, you give a game away at the second game and just collapse in the third. And you're like, okay, now we've got to go to Cincinnati and at least take two out of three. And here you are losing in the end of the sixth.
I was worried about Drew Smyly in this game. And Drew Smyly is the one where I'm like, okay, I could see massive regression here. And I don't want to judge off one game, but he was pretty bad in spring training too. And yeah. I just,
we went from, where's there any room for Hendricks on this roster to come on, Hendricks, come back.
And I love Kyle Hendricks, but I don't know what we're going to get from him anymore.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I'll give Drew Smyly a chance to recalibrate here, but I mean, here's the thing. It's when you're an older veteran like him and you don't have overpowering stuff, it's hard. You know, it's hard to know what you're getting. I mean, because last year Smyly was good. But spring this year and his first start here, I mean, today was just brutal. 7 runs. And when you needed to get a shutdown inning, you took the lead back. You're up 6-4 and you can't. You don't even give yourself a chance to give yourself any momentum after that inning. You give it right back.
You know, and this opening month of the season is actually a tough one for the Cubs. I mean, you had the Brewers, who are going to be in contention for the division lead, or Texas, who have on paper a good roster. Seattle, who
steamrolled the Phillies.
Yeah, the Seattle, who, you know, are dark horse candidate for the World Series. You've got 2 series against the Dodgers, who I think it's 7 games against the Dodgers this month, and they're always good. You've got a series against the Padres, and we'll see what we have against Miami, but it's not a cakewalk schedule.
No. And I think one of the things you think about too, remember last year, remember April and May last year, remember how just horrible that was.
Yep.
And you dug yourself a hole and you ended your season. Second half, you played above 500 ball, but it didn't matter. Right. And, you know, you tried to say, hey, you know, maybe this is momentum for next year and whatnot. So you don't want to do that again.
Yeah. That's the thing is it's real easy to dig yourself a hole. It's real hard to dig yourself out of it.
What's the old saying? You can't win a division in April, but you can lose it.
Yep.
You don't want to be in that situation. And listen, I know we're only 4 games in. I get that. I get that. But, you know, there are things that haven't gone right in these first 4 games. I'm not as worried about. I'm not worried about Jameson Taillon. I think he'll find it fine. You know, like we said about the bullpen, we think that'll get figured out. Say Suzuki is going to be coming back eventually, so you feel solid about that. But, you know, you look at some of the other bugaboos that you have and you wonder, you're like, okay, so, you know, are we going to get reinforcements from minor league prospects sooner or later? Is Matt Mervis going to be that guy? Is he going to be ready to come up? Is Christopher Morel going to take some strides, getting some time in AAA and then coming back up and kind of energizing things? Because, you know, right now, you kind of have a roster with duct tape and sticky tack.
Right.
It's just how long is that going to be? And, you know, you ask this question too. You go beyond that. What about some of the other arms in the system? What are we going to see maybe from Jordan Wicks? Are we going to get a look at him this year? This is probably make or break for Caleb Killian, I think, as a legitimate prospect with this team. I mean, would you say that's accurate?
I would say it's mostly accurate. Yeah.
Because here's the thing. He's in his mid-20s. He's not like a 20, 21-year-old pitcher. And his, I don't know if you saw his first start in Iowa on Sunday.
I didn't.
Got absolutely lit up.
That's bad. Like, it, you know, I say mostly I agree because I think you have room to take steps still. But if you don't have a lot of it, has you have to show clear growth, or that's going to be, you know, considered a loss there, because that's, you need to see the progress. You need to see actual noticeable progress from what you've gotten in the past. And I didn't see Sunday's game, but if he got clobbered, that's a bad start.
Not an ideal start. And again, I'm not saying he's done or anything, but you need to see this year if he can take that stride. I mean, that's what you want to see. Luckily though, you have plenty of other arms in the system, but you know, there's, with all of this being said, with all these things that we want to see get better soon and improve, I think you and I have said this many times, and we'll say it again, that this team, as it's built right now, is not a World Series contender. What we want to see is progression, significant progression.
Right.
If you win 80 games and you go 80-82, but you're in those games and you're seeing young guys grow, you're seeing veterans that are going to be here for the long haul establish themselves, you call that a good season. What you don't want to see is another low mid-70s win season where it's just the same old crap and your prospects aren't developing. That's what you don't want to see. But, you know, regardless of the outlook, it's games like that we've seen recently. We're the one you're watching in Cincinnati, regardless of the outcome, that just drive you nuts. It's the fact that you can't feel like you can grab a lead and keep momentum because you're giving it right back. And the same thing happened against the Brewers the day before. And then the day before, you know, wasn't good hitting conditions, but you saw the holes in your lineup really kind of make themselves known. So it's just, it's stuff that you're tired of seeing.
Right. But yeah, you're going to, this team, we talked about it previously. It's they had a certain amount of room. They could make moves to grow. And so far, I think they're positive moves. They're going to have more room when Bellinger's contract is off the books. Jason Hayward's contract is off the books. They're going to have more room to be able to add to this team. Plus, you hope that some of these young players are ready to ascend and come to the majors as well. You know, but a lot of this team and their success is going to have to come from young players making that jump and showing their worth. I mean, that's really how teams are built. You know, the Dodgers, sure, they should spend a shit ton of money, but look at what that organization has produced from the minor leagues.
Yeah. And every year they have a top 10 farm system.
Yeah.
They've traded over the years for Yu Darvish, for Manny Machado, for Max Scherzer, for Justin Turner, and Mookie Betts, and you still have a top tier farm system.
So yeah, it's,
I mean, that's crazy.
You know, so it's, you need to see this, farm system grow, and not just one guy, but you're going to have to see multiple guys come up if this team is going to take that big jump. You know, we're going to see a jump this year. I mean, just having competent players like, you know, is Trey Mancini tearing it up? No, but, it's a lot better at bats than, than you were seeing last year from guys. You know, you're seeing better defense. That top of the lineup is significantly better. So, you know, you're going to see growth by the end of the season from last year to this year. It's just that you're not seeing nearly the growth that you're going to need to get to a World Series. And I'm not saying never say never. You've got good starting pitching, and you get a couple guys catch lightning in a bottle. Remember the Mets rode one guy to postseason glory. He played for the Cubs. What was his name? The second baseman.
Daniel Murphy.
They rode Daniel Murphy through the playoffs. And that guy just crushed everything. So, you know, a couple guys get hot. Oh, maybe they make the playoffs and make some noise, but they're not a World Series team. They're just not.
The Cubs got the first two on. Patrick Wisdom bunted, popped up for an out. He was bunting. Wisdom was bunting.
Why is your best power hitter bunting?
Oh, well, you know, he might strike out. He on a 3-1 count. He got to 3-0 and showed bunt every time. At first I thought, okay, maybe you could show bunt and pull it back and you drew some balls, but on 3-1, he bunted. I am really, really getting pissed off here. The people are going to be listening to this episode and be like, man, oh man.
That makes no sense. Like, again, I'm not watching it. I'm following online, but why in the world is your best power hitter bunting? Now, it's one thing if there was a big shift on, which they can't do anymore, but if there was a big shift on and you're bunting, you know, to where they ain't, like, okay, the shift, there's no shift. There's just swing the damn bat. Like, you knew who your third baseman was. He's a big swinger. Let him swing.
Just... anyway, we said that a lot. Anyway,
it should be the tagline of the show, Swirsky Sports. Anyway,
seriously, for all these teams, for all these games,
this has just been such a tough time for Chicago sports. We have a basketball team that just. Injuries and can't put it together. We've got two teams that intentionally tanked this year. We had an alcoholic racist manager on one team that team underperformed. And then now they sign a wife beating guy who spits tobacco in his baby's face. And then you have another team that, you know, was just awful last year and is still under quote financial constraints. It's just brutal time to be a Chicago sports fan.
Yeah. So now Hosmer strikes out on three pitches and it's up to Luis Torrens in this inning.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's who you rely on for all your big hits.
Naturally. I don't get it. I don't get what David Ross has been doing this year. I've defended the guy to the death, but man.
He is the manager because the Cubs front office wants a manager that does what they tell him to do. And I'm not saying he doesn't know baseball. Clearly knows baseball. And he's a player's coach slash ass kicker. he brings both things. But you're right. Sometimes in-game stuff, you're just like, what the fuck?
Yeah, and I mean, listen, I thought last year in the second half he managed things quite well, but I mean, there are things you can easily second guess. You know, it's like, okay, sometimes when you have a situation with a pitcher, when you make a relieving, it just doesn't work. You can second guess all the time. It's hindsight 2020. But when you're bunting with your power hitter, and you're leaving in a guy who's gotten crushed and was clearly out of gas to give up a 3-run homer, and then has a guy go multiple innings without even warming anybody up. Like, come on. You can do better than that. And I know you're trying to figure stuff out, but there's no excuse for bunting with your power hitter. Anyway.
I'm looking and I'm following online, and it says batting for the Cubs, unknown.
Good old unknown. He's never struck out, but he's never gotten a hit.
He hasn't. He's batting zero with zero strikeouts.
He's Blutarski.
0.0.
Mr. Blutarski. 0.0.
But on the other side of town, things have been a little more exciting so far. You know, it's cool to see them get a split against the defending World Series champs and take away that you way out hit them and should have done better. And still got the split, and you're like, okay, I can live with that.
Yeah, I mean, you saw a lot of good things in that first series. I mean, you saw some of your guys that you were questioning, can they perform, can they hit? Like, you know what, who's really going on a tear is Yoan Moncada. He has looked absolutely amazing so far. He is hitting the crap out of the baseball. You saw some good swings from Oscar Colas in his debut. You saw Yasmani Grandal come up with some hits. I mean, those were guys where you're like, okay, what are we going to see from the start of the year? And so far, they've come up good. And, you know, obviously on the pitching side, Dylan Cease was absolutely incredible in game one.
Lance Lynn
followed up good game two. And then, you know, even, you know, Clevinger, who is a piece of garbage, but pitched really well in the finale. So, and Lucas Giolito was okay. Wasn't great, wasn't terrible. So overall, your starting pitching in that first series was pretty good.
Yeah, Giolito was fine. You know, but I don't think you need him to be lights out if Lance Lynn is playing lights out. You just need him to be fine. And you're right. Even though he's a pile of garbage, Clevinger pitched really well. Reynaldo Lopez is struggling a bit there, but this team is, you know, you're going to get your closer back. It's seeming like at some point in the season,
Which is so, very, you know, it's, I mean, more than anything, it's good news for him as a person.
Yes. I was talking to Gary yesterday. I was like, yeah, that's the good sign is him as a person. But, you know, as the team, you're like, yeah, that's doubly good. That's like a bonus. And it's funny because Gary was like, yeah, look at how the Sox pitching looks and haven't even pitched Kopech yet. And all I could hear in my head is a jinx bomb dropping. And lo and behold, today, Kopech comes in and drops a stinker. He was bad.
How many home runs? 5. One that actually got taken away by Luis Robert, who I forgot to mention has played some pretty amazing defense.
Right. He's swinging the bat okay. Tim Anderson's doing his Tim Anderson thing. Just consistent. But Moncada's actually swinging the bat well.
Very well.
And Grandal. I said this. You don't need Grandal to be Grandal. You just need Grandal to not be Lurie Garcia.
Yeah, and so far he's been better than Lurie Garcia.
Oh, did you hear the Steve Stone comment about Lurie Garcia?
I did. What did he say again? But I know exactly what you're talking about.
He was like, there's only paraphrasing. It's like, there's only so many times you could just hit a lazy ground ball the second before your job's in jeopardy.
That's what it was. Yes. Yes.
I heard that live and I was like, oh, damn. Steve Stone didn't give any F's.
Yeah. And I kind of feel bad for the guy. You know, he was a fine utility bench guy, but he was overused by Tony La Russa. And, you know, it just didn't end up ending pretty.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. It's when he was used as like a super utility guy, you're like, oh man, Lurie Garcia came up with that nice hit. It's he did what he was supposed to do. It's when you ask a guy to do something other than the thing he's good at, is you screw up and then you get to blame the guy. Like, you know what, if you're Lurie Garcia, what are you going to do? Say, no, I don't want these at bats, or no, don't pay me, you know, this amount of money. Like, of course you're going to take the money and of course you're going to take the at bats. And, you know, there's not many guys that are going to go out there and say, yeah, you know what, I'm stink, put somebody else in. These guys, they all have a, you know, the competitive fire. So of course,
as long as they get a chance to play, they're going to want to play.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's tough. I mean, Lurie didn't do what he was supposed to do, but you know, they didn't put him in a place to succeed either. It's he's a guy that's a utility guy, period.
Right, exactly. And when you're used as an everyday player, I mean, first of all, you screw up your lineup. Second of all, you're not using him properly. I think it's really, really frustrating when, for not only just the team, but for the player himself, when you misuse somebody and things don't work out, you know, it's got to hurt your confidence after a while.
Absolutely.
But, you know, that's in the past now. And right now you have Elvis Andrews playing second. And, you know, I don't know how much really of an offensive threat you're going to look at him as, but at least you know he's going to be rock solid and a veteran out there in the field.
Yeah. You know, you saw some nice things out of him last year. I think he's a professional. I think, you know, he's not going to give you great numbers, but I think he's going to give you in the 240 range.
If you could take that from him at this point, I think you're ecstatic.
Yeah, I agree. You know, so the White Sox, if the White Sox can stay healthy, keep doing the things they're doing, this is a team that I'm going to say I was wrong on. They're going to be better than I thought.
Yeah. I mean, I think so too. And I know we're sitting here 2-3, but listen, there are obviously things that need to get cleaned up. You know, the bullpen has been a bit shaky. We saw them lose two leads against the Astros, and you know, you're trying to, kind of like the Cubs, you're trying to patchwork things right now in the bullpen. And you know, I think Pedro Grifol needs to go away from using Ruiz because he's just gotten shelled so far. But what you hope for is that Kendall Graveman can find some consistency, and then Aaron Bummer can be good for you out there. Because, you know, Ruiz has gotten lit up, and I still don't trust Joe Kelly right now.
Has Joe Kelly pitched yet?
He has, and he took the loss on Saturday, I think. Oof. It was.
Oof.
Yeah. I mean, I know he's got good stuff, but it just hasn't, you know, it just hasn't materialized since he's been with the White Sox, partially because he's been hurt, I think. You know, he's getting older, he's been injured, and, you know,
those injuries.
If he proves himself, sure, but those injuries hurt.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you, as somebody that's getting older, it's, you know, any sort of physical thing, it's tough to come back from. You know, when you're 20s, you're like, I come right back from this. As you get older, your body just wears down more. It's tough to come back from injuries.
Yeah, it really, really is. And I think when you get older too, and you're a pitcher, sometimes you're forced to readjust things if you're not able to execute the way you once did. And I don't know if Joe Kelly's ever going to get back to that, but I'm just saying, until he proves himself, right now, I would not want to trust him in a closer spot at this point.
Yeah, and honestly, you know, just a few facts of life is, if you do anything with any sort of pain associated with it, you know, the mechanics of your motion, no good. And whenever you can't do the things you used to be able to do, you know, some guys are able to figure it out and find, you know, you look at, pitchers that reinvent themselves. You look at players that, you know, like, hey, I can't do the thing I used to do, let me find that other thing. Kind of like Jordan when he did that, you know, turnaround jump shot. And you just reinvent what you do. There's pitchers that can do it. There's other pitchers that just, when they can't find that gear that they used to hit, they, you know, they overthrow and they you know, ability to hit the strike zone or have the precision that they wanted. And, you know, it leads to bad mechanics and more injuries. So it's as you get older, at the, you know, maintaining your body and listening to your body is so much more important.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we gave shit to John Lester at the end of his career because he would go out there and throw a lot of junk, but
that's all he could do at that point.
But you know, he didn't go outside of what he could do. He's like, this is what I can do. I'm gonna get guys out with junk. And right. That's what he did.
Grindy.
Yeah. And that was the gear he found. You know, it's some guys it's adding a different pitch, some guys it's throwing junk. You know, Joe Kelly's got to figure out who he is at this point and how he can work within that framework to be a successful pitcher.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing is you're going to want to be able to find some stability in that bullpen because you don't want to keep having to worry about going out there and wondering how you're going to piece this together and how you're going to get the last few outs in a tight game. Because, you know, we saw it in the first few games when your starting pitchers did their job.
Yeah. So what should we move on to now?
Well, there is some important news right now. We are in last. You know who I'm talking about.
The Blackhawks. It's I've been texting with some friends about this. It's a hell of a time for the teams that were ahead of us it's a hell of a time for the teams that were worse than us in the standings to find winning streaks. But here we are. You know, now the Blackhawks are in sole possession of last place. And it's, you know, there's multiple reasons why this is important. First of all, is the way the lottery system in the NHL works is you can only move up a certain number of spots. So essentially, any team, I think it's, you can only move up 10 spots. So the teams that are below 10, but in the lottery, basically all of the percentages that they would be allowed go to the team with the worst record. So, the overall odds of getting the number one pick, if you're the worst team, is 25.5%. So it's over one in, it's better than one in four. But if you are the second worst team, it's almost halved. It's 13.5%. Mm-hmm. So it's significantly better odds, almost double the odds. And then plus, because the lottery is only for the first two picks, you know, you can only fall two spots. So if the Blackhawks finish with the worst record, even if the luck just doesn't go their way, even if the luck doesn't go their way, they're still going to be picking third. And in this draft, that's really important because there's like four guys that are really good. You need to be in the top four, or else you're losing significant value in these players.
Your top three, any of those top three, would be number one in most other drafts.
Yeah,
of recent years.
Yeah, you've got three really good dudes, and you know, obviously you want Connor Bedard, that you want that number one pick, but you know, the realistic situation of it is, even with the worst record, you know, your odds of getting it are not, you know, they're not fantastic. So if you stay where you are, your odds of getting the number one overall pick, like I said, are 25.5%. Your odds of getting the second overall pick are 18.8%. And your odds of getting the third overall pick are 55.7%. So your most likely odds are you get the number three overall pick.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing is, if you get even number two, that Adam Fantilli kid, I think that's how you say his name.
Yeah.
He might not be Connor Bedard, but damn, he is good. And even number three, I don't remember who's projected number three. I paid so much attention to those first top two, but from what we know is that the value of the top three is very, very high.
Mishkov, the right winger.
Mishkov. Yes. Thank you.
Yeah. And Mishkov. then there's Leo Carlson, the center winger. I think he's from Finland, or he's European, Leo Carlson. But he's a big kid. He's like 6'3". Him and Fantilli are the big kids, and the Bedard and Mishkov are a little smaller. The only thing that's like Mishkov talent wise is just off the charts. The concern with him is he signed in the KHL for another couple years. But talent wise, he's ridiculous.
Yeah. So I need to watch more highlights of some of these other guys.
Yeah. So right now there's just a handful of games left in this NHL season.
Six.
And
for the Hawks.
I think, I want to say that Columbus has seven.
Well, Columbus had a big win the other night. Very happy about that. That's what helped get us here.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. Columbus has six games left.
Yeah, I think they have the same as we do.
And oh yeah, they're all six games, I think. And There's still a handful of teams that have seven games left.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, there's still time to go. It's not a lot, but things can change. We saw how quickly things changed. Remember a few weeks ago, we were worried?
Oh, yeah.
Things can change.
I mean, things can change. I mean, you know, the Hawks have shown that they can beat anybody on any given night. And they've got winnable games against Vancouver and, you know, Philadelphia. So, I mean, who knows? But right now, they're sole possession of the worst record in hockey. They've got 54 points. And, you know, the culmination of suffering through this season, which, you know, I'm going to be honest, for a tanking season, it's been pretty entertaining.
Oh, this has been far more entertaining than I thought we'd see this year.
Like,
we can finish with the worst record and it would still be better than what I thought we were going to be.
This is so much better than any Colleton season.
By far. And those Colleton teams had more talent.
Yeah. Just imagine if you would have kept Colleton one more year, you know, this would be a lock for worst record.
Yeah, right. But, you know, I think that having Luke Richardson around has helped bring out some things from the scheme where it can be like, all right, when you get some NHL caliber talent, you can build with that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, you know, it's, I've seen some people dogging on Luke Richardson. You're like,
you cannot.
Like, what do you expect? Like, they've traded away everybody and then they brought back the corpse of Jonathan Toews to play, you know, the last couple games likely of his NHL career. And he's playing with has-beens and nobodies and he's getting things out of them.
I can't even keep track who's on the roster anymore.
Right.
I mean, you have Anton Khudobin in there, who's like the ultimate AHL goalie.
Yeah. Like, look at this lineup. Who the hell are you? And it's funny. I was at C2E2 over the weekend, and I saw two different people wearing a Kenzie Entwistle jersey.
That's awesome. Are you sure it wasn't his family?
That I was like, I checked to see if it was Mackenzie Entwistle. Just wearing his uniform jersey. It's like, somebody will recognize me.
It is I, Mackenzie Entwistle.
But yeah, I mean, there's just some nobodies on this team, and you're watching them play well together. So it makes you excited. You're like, okay, they're gonna have so many draft picks in the next couple of years. They're gonna have money to play with, and you know, you're gonna see this team drastically improve.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing: if you get a top three pick, you still have a buttload of picks.
Oh yeah, absolute ass load.
Yeah, I mean, it is really set up well to restock your system. Because you have not only a lot of picks this year, but you have picks next year.
Yeah, and the year after.
And the year after, yes.
The next 3 years, you have so many picks in the first three rounds that it's unreal. The embarrassment of riches of draft capital that you have.
Yeah. And you know what? I think that when this is all said and done and you're able to see the draft picks you have before they even play, when you draft all these guys and you kind of identify where their outlook is, you can pair that with where the farm system is now, because, you know, the prospects that the Blackhawks have, the stock has risen significantly. It still has a long way to go, but it's definitely on the upward trend.
Right. You know, and the thing about these draft picks is the way that they're staggered is it allows you to trade away picks for players to fit, you know, veterans that are going to fit right now. And you trade them away for some of this draft capital. And you're, because they're so staggered, you're going to have time to figure out, okay, where did we have players that, you know, we thought were going to develop and didn't, and kind of leaves us holes in our farm system in these positions. And you make trades for guys that fit into those spots. And so you don't necessarily have to draft guys in those spots.
Right.
So it's, you know, you have the ability to start drafting a lot of guys, and then, all right, where did our defenseman not develop? Okay, then let's trade for defenseman.
A good defenseman.
And it's going to be awesome next year watching the Blackhawks have that line of Patrick Kane and Connor Bedard. When they're both playing for the Blackhawks.
Oh my God, you're already doing it.
Got my meatball sauce.
You're already doing it. You are ladling the meatball sauce and you are drinking the Kool-Aid. I love it.
I'm definitely doing it. Definitely doing it. And while while I'm wearing my Derrick Henry jersey.
Did that come in the mail yet?
No, I didn't order it yet. Going to though. I'm going to get my Derrick Henry jersey.
Oh, sure.
But yeah, so there's six games left of this team, and I'm trying to see when is the NHL lottery. Lottery drawing. The draft lottery to take place June 2nd. It's on my birthday. Universe, as a birthday gift to me, I don't ask for much. Just Connor Bedard.
That's a good gift.
That's a good gift. You don't even have to wrap it. Oh, wait, that was the 2021 draft. When is the... I googled, when is the NHL draft? It said June 2nd, and then I clicked on it and it was like 2021. Let's see, NHL draft lottery date. Oh wow, so in 2021 it was June 2nd, this year it's May 8th.
Ooh, that's a few days after my birthday.
As a universe, he doesn't ask for much, but for his birthday, he would like Connor Bedard.
Not much. Just, you know, defying. I guess I wouldn't say defy. If they finish with the worst record, it's not defying the odds, but still, you're still at the mercy of odds.
I mean, yeah, I mean, you have by far and away the highest odds, but it's 1 in 4. You know,
it's far from guaranteed.
I mean, you're not bleak odds, but that's still, man, you don't want to risk your life savings or your life on 1 in 4 odds.
Never tell me the odds. We need Han Solo in here.
We do. We need that. So it is of May 8th, 2023 at 7 p.m. Eastern time.
Mark your calendars, folks.
So we're like a month away.
And, you know, we're getting close to the NFL draft. We're getting close to the NHL draft and the lottery. I mean, man, like these big moments for Chicago sports' future are coming up quick.
Everything's coming up Milhouse.
Everything's coming up Milhouse.
So yeah, it's I hope they lose these next six games. That's all I can hope for. You control your destiny. Kyle Davidson's like, we can do this. We can do this. Luke Richardson's champing at the bit, like, gotta get a goddamn win.
Do it. And by that, I cannot do it.
Do or do not. There is no try.
Do or do not. There is no try.
So I want to talk some Bears here. The Bulls are just...
I mean, they're on the verge. They're on the verge. They've been winning games.
I know.
I don't want to just squeak into the playoffs and go nowhere. But that's honestly where we're probably going to.
And that's the frustrating part. Is like, all right, so they're going to lose their first round pick this year. And they're right now, they're the 10 seed.
Yeah, I know.
So they, you know, if they didn't make the playoffs, at least they'd be in the lottery and you have a ticket. You have a ticket. You have a chance. Could they get that number one overall pick or the top four pick and keep your first round pick and not send it to Orlando? You're like, okay. And then you can hang your hat on that. Oh, hey, we got a top four pick here. You know, you're going to string together a few wins. You have a nice win against Memphis, and then you get blown out by terrible ass Los Angeles. It's just a frustrating team to watch.
Yeah, I know. And I mean, it's like, you see how they've played with Pat Bev, and you're like, where was that all season? Did we really need Pat Bev to get these guys into gear? Because it was probably too little too late. I mean, even if you do make the play-in or the playoffs, so what? You're going to play Milwaukee and get thwomped in the first round again?
Right.
Because, I mean, it's been more enjoyable to watch them recently. It's just, it's frustrating that it's coming the timing it is. Kobe White's been playing really good. That's been fun. You're seeing solid flashes from Patrick Williams. Zach LaVine is doing what Zach LaVine should be doing. Vooch has been having some big games. It's just like, man.
Kobe White, I hope they re-sign him, because otherwise he's going to wind up being the next guy that goes on, leaves the Bulls, and finds success. He's a guy that has really had ups and downs with this team. And I think you're finally seeing him mature as a basketball player and do some nice things.
Yeah. And I mean, I feel like there's more confidence in him too.
You know, I think you let Vooch walk unless he can sign a team friendly deal. But is he going to do that, or is he just going to go out and try to get the biggest contract he can get?
Well, and that's the other thing, too. It's either you re-sign him or he walks. You don't get anything for him.
You know, unless it's a sign-and-trade type thing. But
yeah, I don't know. Maybe.
And you're still not getting a lot for him.
No.
But, you know, the hope is he can sign a team-friendly deal. You're probably going to move DeMar. And so you at least get something. You get his contract off the books and whatever assets you can get for him. And I think the hope is that you go, okay, if we undeniably make this Zach LaVine's team, do we see the growth in Zach LaVine?
Well, and I mean, here's the thing is when Zach LaVine is on and he's scoring, that makes a big difference. And unfortunately, you know, you're never going to get the defensive component out of him. But, you know, we remember this about Zach LaVine for those reasons is if he's not scoring, then you're not getting much of anything. You need him to consistently score, and we've seen him score very well on a number of nights recently.
Yeah, I mean, it's true. It's funny. My buddy Gary was talking with Zach LaVine the other day in Los Angeles.
Really?
Yeah. His, yeah. And he was talking about the, it was after the Clippers game, and they're like, you know, we had a plan, and we were going to stop, you know, Kawhi Leonard, and then he's like, you know, Batum and Gordon just took over, couldn't miss anything. And, you know, it just sort of put a thorn in their team plan that you had guys that just couldn't miss anything.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, it's when you see that happen, it's almost like, what can you do?
Yeah. And that's really what happened, is they had a plan. They were like, we're going to stop Kawhi. And, you know, the other two guys dropped nearly 50 points.
I mean, you know, look, I don't consider them a strong defensive team by any means, but there are times when Bulls opponents will just pull up these ridiculous shots, and you shrug your shoulders and you say, what can you do? Like, yeah. Honestly. But with that being said, you know, Pat Bev helps, but, you know, you think about what you once had in Lonzo Ball. Could you imagine if we had Lonzo Ball and they were playing like this right now? Feel a little better.
Yeah. Unfortunately, that kid, who knows if he's ever going to play again, or if he probably will. It just, who knows if he's going to ever play it at a high level again.
I mean, how many knee surgeries? Three?
Three. Three since the last time he played in an NBA game.
Oh, man.
It's brutal. I feel bad for him. And, you know, nobody's heard from him.
You don't hear the details.
No. And it's sad. I mean, you know, he's a good kid. His dad's a doucher, but he's a good kid. And
his dad's a knucklehead.
It's true.
A head made of knuckle.
He's crazy knucklehead. He's crazy. He's got a knuckle on his head.
Sometimes when I see, like, when I see LaVar Ball, I just picture, like, the Three Stooges. And I mean, like, his kids are very talented guys, and he's just a massive goof.
LaVar Ball. Let's talk some Bears here. You know, this is a really slow time of the season. It's that, you know, the free agency has really, tide has come in and gone back out. You know, we'll see some movement, but, for the most part, it is going to be real quiet for the next few weeks. We've got the draft in like 20 something days. And, the Bears are in a weird spot because there's so much unknown between where they're, you know, picking and where we sort of see the draft split. You know, the first four picks are going to be three quarterbacks and one defensive lineman, whether it's the edge from Texas Tech or Will Anderson, or Jalen, who knows, Jalen Carter, one of those three guys. And then three of the quarterbacks are going to be the first four picks. I'm pretty confident with that.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, it's just, you know, you have a whole bunch of unknowns. The Lions are a wild card. The Seahawks are a wild card. The Falcons are a wild card. The Raiders are a big wild card.
You never know what's up their sleeve, man. It's the Raiders.
And if you're the Bears, you know, part of you is like praying that Will Levis, that fourth quarterback, goes in the first eight picks, because that means a non-quarterback position, extra non-quarterback position, is going to fall to you. But if, but then on another hand is, if he's still available, is there a possibility for you to trade back and somebody trade up to nine and be able to get Will Levis? That possibility exists, because you're in a weird spot. You know, you're probably not going to get the top corner, maybe not even the top two corners. It's way too early for the wide receivers. The edge rushers that you want are already off the board, most likely. And who knows what Jalen Carter's happening with him. I mean, if you tell me he's going to go three, like, that, obviously they're riding on that tape, but that tape was real good. But if he fell to the Bears, I wouldn't be shocked either. So who knows? The offensive linemen that run, that's going to be a run. And you just go, okay, where does that run start? Does it start with the Bears? You know, there's a few guys you feel comfortable with, I think, if you're the Bears and you want to go offensive line. So you could trade out of that nine. And I feel like the Bears are in a kind of that beginning of that no man's land, where the elite guys are kind of off the board, and they're the start of the guys that you like and are solid, but aren't the sexy picks. And as much as people are like, Jackson Smith and the Jigba, like, why in the world are you going to draft that? That's a luxury pick, is going after JSN. That's a luxury pick, is you've got to protect your quarterback.
Yeah.
And honestly, if you're do any of us have any idea how this organization views Tevin Jenkins? I mean, as fans, we love him when he's healthy.
Well, that's the problem, is are they confident that that's going to happen, that he's going to stay healthy over a season?
You know,
I'm not as sure that they are.
I don't know either. And that, you know, they do have some flexibility, is because they haven't cut Lucas Patrick yet. So, I mean, you're right now, are they, I think they're just trying to put themselves in a position to put the best five guys out there. And, you know, you've seen the video, or you know, you've probably seen the video of Braxton Jones working out with Olin Krutz this off season. And what's interesting is, unless it's a, you know, a camera like flipping it, he's coming out of a right tackle position, not left tackle. So unless it's the camera flipping the view, it's he's coming out of a right tackle position, which is interesting. And I wonder if that's him just being ready to do that, or if it's the organization saying, hey, we want you to work on this because we might flip you to that side. But, you know, you're working yourself into trying to be able to put your best five offensive linemen out there. And right now, you know, putting Cody Whitehair at center is your best option, because then you've got the guard you just picked up and Tevin Jenkins. So those are your guards, and Braxton Jones at one tackle, and then figure out who the other tackle is, you know, or you have some flexibility is could you kick Tevin Jenkins back out and put Cody Whitehair back at guard, and then either Doug Kramer, who's an unknown at this point. I mean, Doug Kramer, I liked him coming out of Illinois. No, you know, there's nothing to say that he doesn't come back from injury and look decent as a center. And then you have Lucas Patrick, who's a guy that they liked coming out of Green Bay. And playing one of those guys or a draft pick at center. And then you could also, you know, even add more flexibility by drafting a guy like Peter Skoronski out of Northwestern, because I've said it before, is it's based on his short arms, it's going to be tough to play tackle in the NFL. He's a good enough offensive lineman. I think he's not going to fail, but I think he'll be an okay offensive tackle, but I think he could be an elite guard. But he gives you that flexibility that he could play pretty much anywhere along that line and be successful. But it gives you that flexibility where you're just, you know, hey, if Jenkins can't play tackle, all right, we can kick Skoronski out. Or if he can, you flip flop him and put Tevin Jenkins back out there at tackle and you put Skoronski back in at guard. It gives you that flexibility to be able to do that. And I think, you know, that's going to be important, because, you know, you're not going to get any elite level talent. I mean, maybe you draft a guy that becomes elite, but you're not going to add elite talent at the offensive line position at this point. It's going to be, you have to develop guys, develop draft picks, or sign, you know, second tier talent. So you're going to have to build that offensive line from scratch here.
Yeah. And I mean, you're going to do it Ryan Poles has talked about how much he wants to build through the trenches, and he's going to get the opportunity to shape it in his vision, so to speak.
Right. And, you know, it's a little weird. It's like, he's almost painted himself in the corner of, if you're the Bears, like, you've got to go line with your first pick, because it's such a glaring need, both sides, you know, either offensive line or defensive line. But you've almost painted yourself in that spot. You know, that's why I wish they had brought in even if it would have been a low level veteran, if they would have brought a veteran in, you'd feel a little more confident about, you know, the offensive line. And because, you know, is cornerback our biggest need? No. But if you have one of those top two corners fall to you at nine, you know, that's, you've got to be in a position where you feel confident that you could take that cornerback and not hurt your team. But as it is now, if they don't take an offensive line or offensive or defensive lineman, they're almost doing themselves a disservice.
Right.
But yeah, the way that this draft is kind of starting to play out, barring any trades up, you know, the Bears are in the beginning of that no man's land, where, you know, some of the elite talent is gone and you're in that middle pack. You know, I'm not in love with a lot of these wide receivers. They don't need a linebacker. You're not going to draft a safety in the first round. You sort of narrowing yourself down to what you can do. And honestly, part of me is like, well, you could trade back because it gives you more draft assets and you need more bites at the apple to succeed. But it also, you know, the picture plays out a little more where they are now. I think whoever they draft is probably going to be an overdraft.
Well, and I think the idea of trading back is you at least trade back a few spots, get a bit more capital, but stay within the parameters of guys you want to target.
Right. But
because you know that board has got a ton of names on it. That whiteboard with the squeaky marker, it's filled with guys.
But you know, if you're the Bears, like anybody that you're probably going to draft is a guy that you're going to draft higher than you would like to pick, because you know, Will Anderson's a guy that's not going to fall to you. Tyree Wilson, the edge rusher from Texas Tech, I would be shocked if he falls to you. He was a guy I thought could, but the more I keep looking at the draft board, I just don't see it happening. Jalen Carter probably won't fall to you, but there's a possibility. And I think Christian Gonzalez will be gone by then. So then it comes down to, all right, who wouldn't be a guy that you feel you could just get in, you know, later on in the draft? Like the offensive lineman, I think between Paris Johnson, Peter Skoronski, Darnell Wright, and Broderick Jones, I think three of the four of those guys will be available at pick 15. At least two of them will be, but probably three.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you're like, I could trade back and still get the same caliber guy. Same thing with cornerback. You know, like a Joey Porter or a Deontay Banks. Those are guys you're like, okay, I could get one of those guys, and they're that like 1B category of cornerback. I could get them, you know, is probably as late as pick 18 or 20. So you're like the same caliber of guys that you're drafting at 9, you feel like you could get at 15, maybe even 20. And you know, so if you're the Bears, I got that your phone has got to be active. You're going to use up that whole time. You're not, I mean, unless something crazy happens, like Will Anderson just falls, you know, you're not going to run to the podium with your pick. You're going to be fielding calls and seeing if you can make a deal.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you're not going to just let a team, even if you don't have, I don't think Ryan Poles is a guy that's going to trade you a pick and not get value for it. Like, he's not going to just trade back to get a little value. He's going to be wanting full value for that pick.
Right. And I think that he's not going to sell short. That's for sure. He hasn't sold short yet, really. Let's be real.
Yeah. So, you know, it's still funny that you have people that are still bitching and moaning about that trade. Like, they should have gotten more. Like, maybe they could have. But here's the thing. If you absolutely just put a team over the barrel and you get that reputation that, you know, you're difficult to work with, and you squeeze and squeeze and squeeze, teams aren't going to want to trade with you.
Yeah.
Plus,
yeah, there's something to be said about that.
Plus, he has relationships with these guys. Like, mm-hmm. So you know, you're going to extract value, but you're not going to screw him over. I mean, if this works out right for both teams, like both teams play this right, this could be a really big win-win for both teams. Like this has, I mean, if, you know, you traded, if you're Carolina, you're like, man, it sucks that we traded away that many picks. But if you wind up with a franchise quarterback from this, you don't give a shit about those picks. You know, you're not, you don't have the caliber of wide receiver like a DJ Moore, but you also, you did bring in some wide receiver talent. So there's at least some players around that new quarterback. You've got a good defense. You've got a pretty good offensive line. Like, you've got a good team there. If you pick the right quarterback, like, you're like, okay, I can live without these picks. You know, we gave away a wide receiver. We gave away another first rounder and, you know, a couple of extra picks. And you're like, okay, I can live without those. I'm not, you know, I've built a pretty strong team otherwise. And if you're the Bears, you gave that number one type weapon to Justin Fields to help him hit that year three trajectory that we saw with Josh Allen and with Jalen Hurts. You're like, okay, we're giving him that ability. Plus, you have multiple draft picks after that that you gained from that trade, which is just, again, multiple bites at the apple.
Chomp, chomp.
Chomp, chomp. So, you know, this could work out really, really well for the Bears as well as the Panthers.
Yeah, no, I think it's, you don't know what you're going to get on draft day. You just don't know. When you get a deal like the deal you got a few weeks ago, you got to take that, man.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? People are like, oh, I would have traded with the Texans.
You don't know what they were going to offer, if they were going to offer anything.
Yeah, the beauty of them is, you know, if they're like, oh, the Bears are looking to trade with Carolina, and they feel confident that Carolina is going after C.J. Stroud, and Texans are like, we wanted Bryce Young all along, then this worked out. But if you're the Texans and you did your homework and you feel confident with two quarterbacks, then you don't care, you know, which one falls to you. You're like, I'd rather just keep my picks. The Colts seem like they're just going to hold strong and let it fall. It's playing out like they're going to get Anthony Richardson. You know, so other teams just may not want to give up the same value that, you know, that you're expecting. So you take the deal that's on the table.
Right. Exactly.
So I'm never going to shit on this. You got a good haul.
Yeah, you got a haul that can make a big difference for your future.
Yep. So I'm trying to look at the full package of what they got. So the Bears got the number 9 overall this year, the second Carolina's second overall pick this year, their first rounder next year, and their second rounder in 2025, and DJ Moore. So you got 2 seconds, 2 firsts, and a number one wide receiver.
I mean, I say this once, I say it again. A lot of the value in that trade not only came from the fact that you got a second round pick or a first round pick in the second year, but you got a legitimate wide receiver out of that. We thought that the biggest deal of the trade would have been getting another first. The biggest deal of this trade is getting DJ Moore.
Yeah.
And I mean, you got that second first.
Is true story is the Packers offered the Panthers a first round pick for him at the trade deadline last season, and they said no. So
right.
They view him as a better than a first round player, a first plus. So probably a first and a third type player. So essentially you got for your one, the number one overall pick, you got three first rounders, two second rounders, and a third rounder. For all intents and purposes. Mm-hmm. And DJ Moore is under contract for the next several years. You know, you're paying for him, but he's under contract. You don't have to worry about, you know, doing a new deal for him, you know, in this year or next year.
Exactly.
So yeah, it's funny. I keep redoing my own mocks, just like tweaking things here and there. I'm like, all right, well, what's realistic for this other team to do, and versus, you know, what's an outside the box move they can do, and really trying to analyze, you know, what the most likely scenario is, what's available for the Bears. And it sort of just keeps playing out very similarly. You know, there's always going to be some shock value move or, or, you know, a team trading up, you know, whatever the case may be. There's always some kind of wackiness in the first round of the NFL draft, but honestly, it's tough seeing this play out super awesome for the Bears at nine. You know, I really do think that they trade back and don't make that pick at nine.
I've told people when it first happened that it wasn't going to happen likely, but then as time goes on and the more we look at this, I'm like, okay, maybe they will. And I think it's looking more and more likely that they will.
Yeah. Is the more I keep looking at this, the draft picks that are available, is there's the handful of guys you're like, oh, these are the top guys. And then after that, that second bucket is pretty wide. Like that range of guys from 10 to 40 are very similar caliber. And so if you're the Bears, you're like, oh, how many in the top 40 right now? I have one pick. What if I could get two or three picks in that same range? You feel more confident in what you can do, but you know, you've got to move back and you take advantage of when you have a high draft pick. And also, in a draft class that stacks up well, because there's sometimes where if you get a high draft pick and it's a draft class, you're like, the talent's too good to pass up to trade back to get, you know, additional picks. This is a draft where you're like, I have the capability. You know, it's a deep cornerback draft. It's a deep defensive line draft. It's a fairly deep offensive line draft. And those are the positions you need. So you have that ability to take a step back. You know, if you're the Bears, though, you just got to be smart and play this right. You don't want to take too big of a step back, because I think it's funny for a team that was the worst team record-wise in the NFL last year, you know, talent-wise, clearly not, but record-wise, they were the worst team in the NFL, and they have a lot of holes, but, you know, you're not going to draft, you know, defensive line depth in the top 10 of the draft. You're not going to duplicate an effort. That guy's got to be on the field and playing for you to be successful. So you're limited in who's going to be available that can come in and start for your team and perform. You know, there's the edge rushers and the defensive linemen. There's only a couple of guys I'm very high on. There's some other guys that are popping in here, but they're a little bit of tweeners. wide receiver, it's just not the value pick. You're not going after quarterback. You're not, Bijan Robinson is the number one running back in the draft, but you know, that's just not a value pick at number nine. And so you're looking really at the offensive linemen, and maybe some of the defensive linemen or the cornerbacks. Those are your most likely landing spots for the Bears if they stick it around. And honestly,
we'll see what happens.
And honestly, it's funny, you know, the teams that do really well, you know, you think, oh, hey, you reward the teams that do the worst with the best pick, and then you punish the team that do the best by having the worst pick. But at the end of that first round, you know, you see a lot more success because, you know, there's at the top of the draft, it's almost like you have to go with a consensus. You can't pick outside the box at the early on. But later on, like if you're the Chiefs and you pick a guy that, oh, the analysts are said that, you know, he should be picked in the 50s or the 40s, and you pick him, or, you know, in the 50s, and you pick him at the late 20s or 32 or whatever, you're like, nobody's going to beat you up about that. But you have that opportunity to pick whoever you want at that point, because you're a successful franchise, and you have this wiggle room to be able to, you know, draft how you want. But when you draft early on, it's like, if you're the Texans and you're like, oh, you know what? We really love Christian Gonzalez and think he's going to be a special cornerback, and you take Christian Gonzalez at two, holy cow, you are going to have the entire football beat writer and analyst, group just shitting all over you. You know, it's, you almost are like bullied into picking these guys.
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
Was there anything else you wanted to talk about?
No, I think I've said my piece. I'm too angry about this Cubs loss.
Is it over?
Yep, they lost 7-6.
Jesus Christ.
And Patrick Wisdom needs x-rays. And Patrick Wisdom is yet allowed to stay in and swing in the top of the ninth, after he bunted foul in the seventh, after he got hit by the pitch. That was earlier in the game.
Fun.
Yeah. I honestly, like, this past hour, I've just been so pissed off. You could probably tell.
Yeah, you could tell. But that's going to do it for this episode of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. I want to thank everybody so much for listening. Please hit subscribe however you listen to podcasts, whether it's iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, Google Play, Spotify, etc. Share this podcast with your friends. It's how we grow the show. Follow us on social media at Swirsky Sports, Facebook.com/Swirsky Sports, SwirskySports.com, or ShyFanPat2 for Alex on Twitter, or AlexanderJPatCreative.com for all the cool stuff that Alex does. And again, thank you guys so much for listening, and until next time, bear down.
Cubs win! What a lucky break! The good Lord wants the Cubs to win!
We thank Ditka and God for all they have provided.
Cubs win! Cubs win! Cubs win!
Oh, I don't want her, you can have her, she's a Packer fan. She can't fit in my van, and she looks like...
Remember, New Yorkers, smoking crack is not legal on planes.
Bears, 31 to -7.
The Bears!
Oh, when the Bears go bearing down...